On this week's Texas Scorecard Radio, in the news, we have school administrators caught in the act and one state rep caught with his hand in the cookie jar, plus updates on a couple of stories. In our interview, we'll learn about some young conservatives who are fighting back for their free speech rights. We'll also go on the trail with Kerry Cheshire to talk about some Texas Senate races. And we'll close with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan. Welcome back to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. Before we get started with this week's news, I wanted to plug one of my own articles up at texasscorecard.com, some breaking news related to the culture of voting effort and misuse of school district resources by school district employees. As we've been talking about on the program over the past weeks and really months, there's a campaign going on by liberal groups, to teachers' unions, the Texas Association of School Boards, to encourage block voting by school district employees and students and teachers to go in and flood the Republican primary with liberal votes for liberal candidates. It's almost akin to what Rush Limbaugh did with his Operation Chaos back in 2008. Just up this week, we've got a new article up at TexasScorecard.com. We have caught, thanks to a whistleblower who has raised these issues to us, we have caught a school principal in the act of misusing school district resources to campaign for Scott Milder, the very liberal candidate running against conservative Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. So I'd encourage listeners to check that out. Go to the website and read more about that misuse of resources and some of the things that are at stake there. Now that that's out of the way, I wanted to talk to Brandon Waltons, our Capitol Bureau chief, about several news items. Yeah. The big ticket item here is this big story coming out of the Houston area state representative there who has caught the hand in the cookie jar, kind of abusing his office to make money in ways that present some very serious conflicts of interest. And we'll talk about that in a second, but I wanted to talk first a couple updates on some articles and some issues that you and I have been discussing in the past. First up, Chairman of the Republican Party, James Dickey, who we've had on the program before, has a challenger in the Republican primary. You're writing about that.
Yes, James Dickey was, of course, elected when Tom Meckler left by the SREC last year. Is going to be running for re-election at the state convention this summer. He has a primary challenger at the convention by the name of Cindy Ash, who announced yesterday.
Yeah, and so you've got an article up kind of profiling a little bit about Miss Ash. That's something that'll develop over the coming weeks, but it'll be something really interesting to follow. Second thing I wanted to touch quickly on that was another issue you and I think, discussed a few weeks back, the Texas Association of Business. People hear Texas Association of Business, they think, oh man, these guys must be for lower taxes, limited government, you know, things that are pro-business. But in fact, the Texas Association of Business, the Texas Association of Liberal Business, as we sometimes call them, promotes some very far-left policies here in the state. And they're out with some additional endorsements against conservatives. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so these are the people that are very anti-privacy legislation, anti-sanctuary cities. They added to their endorsements this week, added State Rep Dan Flynn, Clint Bedsole, who's
running a good conservative challenger running against Flynn up in North Texas.
Yes, Clint Bedsole up in Frisco, who's running for the open seat vacated by Representative Pat Fallon, and James Wilson, who is running against Valerie Swanson.
Yeah, so this is a perennial candidate down in the Houston area. Just a kind of odd guy running against very conservative members. Very interesting to see them endorsing again against all of these conservative challengers and incumbents. So I wanted to talk about that. Encourage listeners, go check out Brandon's article about the Texas Association of Business keeping up their liberal track record. But the big ticket item, as I mentioned, is this big story. Jim Murphy in Houston making tons of bucks. Really looking like he's profiting off of his office. Tell us about what you've written about for that.
Yeah, so this was a story that surprised us all. Channel 2 News KPRC out of Houston did a investigation into State Representative Jim Murphy, represents a part of the Houston area, did an investigation to some of his personal finance. It turns out he's actually making $312,000 a year doing consulting work as the general manager for the West Chase District, which is a special purpose district.
Yeah, and so people think of government. They think of Washington, D.C., Congress. They think of, you know, the state legislature in Austin. They think of their local county commissioners. They think of their city council. All of these things are fairly familiar. But this insidious kind of development creature, if you will, of government in the state of Texas and elsewhere is the special purpose district. These districts that, you know, sometimes you don't even know if you live in one, you don't know where it is, but it's a taxing entity. It's
they're collecting taxes, they're taking money from the state, they're doing things like that. Jim Murphy's arrangement with this district, however, what's surprising is he actually, not only was he getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, but he's actually getting bonuses for securing funding from the state for things like transportation.
Yeah, and so at the same time as he is a state representative serving, you know, or supposedly serving his constituents, going to Austin to vote on their behalf to represent their interests, he's also being paid megabucks by the special district to go and secure financing for the special district, maybe not even in the interest.
Right, and sometimes at the same time.
Yeah. It really is this amazing thing of someone in office who's lobbying, basically a lobbyist while being an elected official at the same time. And that's what we're seeing here, and we've seen it before.
Exactly, and the final note there is that Jim Murphy served as the chairman of the special purpose districts in the House, appointed by Speaker Joe Strauss.
So yeah, I think this is a really amazing issue. We'll have to follow up on it some more, but I encourage listeners to check out your reporting on this issue and the others. Thanks for everything you do and everything you write, Brandon.
Yes, thank you. At TexasScorecard.com.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At TexasScorecard.com or EmpowerTexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at EmpowerTexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on the program this week Warren Norrod with Norrod Law Firm and also Alliance Defending Freedom, representing a group of young conservatives in the Houston area who are fighting back to defend their free speech rights. Thanks for coming on the program. Tell us about what your clients are facing and what you're doing about it.
Well, thanks for having me on, and I'm glad to happy to do that. The Alliance Defending Freedom found out about a group of people at the Sci Fair. It's in Cypress, Texas, and they have a kind of a junior college over there, and they had formed a local group of the Young Conservatives of Texas. And as most people probably listening to this know, the Young Conservatives of Texas is a student group that generally does all the things that you might expect to spreading the conservative viewpoints.
Fun conservative rabble rousing.
Right, right. They often express, they're often a minority on many campuses because they espouse basic conservative ideas. And so they formed this organization, and of course, as most people know, you have to have a faculty advisor of some sort with just about every student organization. And in these kinds of colleges where you've got mostly part-time faculty and you've got a lot of students, you don't have a lot of people that are willing to be sponsors. And so they eventually were able to get one of the people that makes the decisions on who an appropriate sponsor is and who an appropriate organization is to be their sponsor. And then when they wound up, eventually they wound up having a filmed abortion discussion where they had fair authorities on both sides expressing the debate. And then they had a clips reel of that, and it was put online. And then the sponsor decided that they didn't want to be part of that, and so yanked their position. And so now, although they are paying student fees for activities, they're not allowed to have those fees be used to support the causes and viewpoints they have. And so Alliance Defending Freedom heard about this, and for those who don't know, Alliance Defending Freedom is a large alliance of attorneys all over the country that are mostly volunteers, and picked up, and they asked for local counsel, and that's how I got on board. And so they're representing the YCTs and David Shepard, who's the lead plaintiff, to say, look, you can't take money from us and force us to pay for liberal viewpoints and programs and then deny us the ability to put on our own programs that show a different view. That's viewpoint discrimination. You can't
have
that.
That's right. That's right. And it's a violation of these students' civil rights for a government entity like that to pick and choose the kind of viewpoints that they want to support and to suppress them in this. You know, one of the things that I found most striking as I was reading the petition going through, this is not even a controversial event. It's a controversial topic, but the topic, it was a debate. You had a NARAL pro-abortion activist on one side. You had a pro-life advocate, a speaker on the other side. They have a debate. This is about, you know, this is what we're supposed to be doing in civil society. And the administration comes in and says, no, we don't like that. We don't like you putting videos on the internet of it. We're going to shut you down as an organization over that. That almost blows my mind. I would expect if they're going to get shut down, it would have to be something more offensive to the establishment than that.
Right. I mean, you could at least say it's different if you had the world's best pro-life speaker against some yahoo that thinks that you ought to have a partial birth abortion while the baby's in the canal, or something that's off the wall, so you're designed to make the pro-choice side, we'll call it, look bad. But this was a fair discussion that a pro-choice organization might have actually held.
Right.
And
right.
So it's not as though it was one-sided.
Yeah. And they basically just shut this organization down. Now, let's talk about this faculty advisor requirement. You know, I went and testified recently at the Senate State Affairs Committee hearing. They had a hearing at the Texas State University campus to talk about this issue of free speech on campus and the free speech environment. And it's actually started, I think it was basically the same day they're having this hearing that this lawsuit is being filed about this very real scenario at Lone Star College in Cy-Fair. And, you know, I went there and testified before the committee, and I pointed out, you know, when I was a student, I wasn't required to have a faculty advisor, but I experienced this as I talked to students at other campuses around the state. So often they were required to have a faculty advisor, and it became hugely difficult as a conservative student to say, where do you go to find conservative faculty who are right. willing to put their name on the line to support a conservative viewpoint when, you know, as everyone knows, academia is just overrun with not just liberals, but the far left. So I think that really, as y'all are saying in the petition, is the core of the problem, this policy that says, you've got to get somebody who's on the payroll to sign off on your speech.
Right. It's almost like you've got to hire the enemy to favor you just having the opportunity to talk. We had this at UTA when I was at UTA. We had the famous Alan Sachs, who was fairly libertarian in those days, and he would be the sponsor for just about anybody. And so that's what we wound up having for our student group that was libertarian. But they use these things and they say, well, that sounds like a reasonable requirement, right? You should have adult supervision. And so
this community.
Right.
So they're adults to begin with.
Right. So, but that's what they do. And so they say, if you can't do that, then that's not on us. So they establish the rules in an environment where those rules are difficult to meet, and then they blame you because you can't meet with their rules.
Yeah, this one is so striking because, as is recounted in the petition, this young man, this starting the YCT chapter there at his college, goes to the faculty, I think 15 different faculty members, and says, hey, will you be my advisor? And they all say universally, either, hey, no, I don't like you. I don't like your group. I don't like your viewpoint, in which is their prerogative. They're not obligated. But the college is obligated to allow them to participate in public discussion on campus. And so he goes to the administration and says, hey, appoint an advisor. And so they put this guy in charge. And basically, the first event that goes on, he comes in and is ticky-tack about, oh, well, I don't want you posting videos on the internet of the speech. It really is just the perfect example of how these policies, which in other cases like yours, you find somebody who is cooperative, who's not harassing, who can accommodate the group, you know, it works out okay. But just exactly how these policies can be abused and used by the campus. And I think the point, you know, you make in the petition is it's that unbridled discretion. There's no control or authority over the campus to say what speech is allowed and what speech is not allowed. It basically allows them to pick and choose.
Right. And whenever you say, in fact, we do have in the petition the statement that several of the people interviewed, the faculty members, said that they were concerned about the potential consequences to their standing at the college if they became associated with the YCT's views. In a situation where you have a lot of people that are mostly part-timers, there's nobody tenured. You know, usually the person who's willing to take the chance is the person who's bulletproof. Right. Tenured professor. So in these junior colleges, you don't have a lot of those guys hanging around. And so everybody could lose their job if they were to become associated with YCT. And so they talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess, you know, the answer here is to file suit. This is what this group has done. They've gone to federal court and filed a civil rights action saying, hey, we want this policy struck down. Tell us a little bit about what the plaintiffs are asking for in the suit. Tell us a little bit about also on the dollars policy. Tell us more about that.
Well, this is a 1983 suit, and you'll hear that phrase from time to time. You violated our right. In this case, we've talked about the right of association of the First Amendment, the freedom of speech to have our own speech. And then the backside of that is you shouldn't be forcing us to be compelling us to pay for the speech of others. We didn't have, you know, the students didn't have any due process. It was just yanked away from them because of an arbitrary decision by an administrator. And that there's an equal protection basis, an equal protection claim, because there's no rational reason to say that if an abortion group, pro-abortion group, pro-choice group has the same event that the pro-life group has, that one's okay and one's not. And then, of course, the right to be free from retaliation. In a case like this, what you're looking for is a declaratory judgment by a federal court that says this policy cannot stand and you've got to change it. Then you're looking for an injunction to say you can't enforce that policy. And then you're looking for anybody from denying that they're a registered student organization, basically telling they've got to change their policy.
Right, right.
And then damages.
Yeah.
And so damages are typically attorney's fees. And then if there's any actual real economic damages, and I don't know if we have any actual real damages.
Probably nominal damages here and then an injunction.
Yeah, nominal.
Right. But I think, I guess the answer here, you've got the courts able to step in, but as the legislature is looking at this issue, it's another issue that the legislature can step in and say, hey, look, colleges, you can't have these mandatory faculty advisor policies. We should let students meet and have the organizations that they want to have.
Oh, absolutely. And we all know that, you know, writing good legislation is sometimes not easy, right? And you want college campuses to be generally self-run, but, you know, it's being paid for by tax dollars, and occasionally you have to step in and say, look, you can't treat people this way.
Yeah.
You've got to make these changes. And so it's the kind of reasonable change that happens over time, is the legislature has to say, you guys are generally working well, but we need to have this little tweak. And this little tweak has to respond to the reality that part-time professors can't handle the political flack of representing a conservative group, And in a campus of this nature, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
In many campuses, this wouldn't be a problem because you'd find people that are conservative, and they'd be able to get by, be able to find a sponsor, and so that they'd be able to handle that. But that's not always going to be the case. And so here's a situation where a legislature can step in, and should step in, and say, let's fix this in the front end instead of letting it all go all the way to a federal court before we fix it.
Right. So, well, I'm excited to follow the case and see how these things develop, and also follow how this issue moves in the legislature. Before we finish, tell listeners where they can learn more about your work as an attorney, and then also the work that you do in the with Alliance Defending Freedom.
Yeah, let me talk about Alliance Defending Freedom first. Alliance Defending Freedom is one of those great organizations that files the lawsuits that we hear about so often. They represented Jack Phillips and the Master Pete's Cake Shop in Colorado case and similar cases like that where there's been somebody making a stand for their faith. NORED Law, we're at NORED Law, NORREDLAW.com, NORED Law. And we often take cases under what we call the White Hat Law brand of cases, where these are cases where people, you know, attorneys should use their time to help out. And so that's such things as red light cameras. And if there's a, you know, we're handling the Open Meetings Act case for right. Amy Hetke down in Austin, things
right.
like that.
Right.
So these are the kind of cases that you become an attorney for.
Yeah,
so we really enjoy those.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you doing your part from one attorney to another, a guy doing his part to defend the rights of Texans. Thank you for your work. Thank you for coming on and discussing this issue with us.
Thanks for having us.
For this week's On the Trail segment, I wanted to talk to Kerry Cheshire about some of the Senate races that are going on around the state. These kind of get forgotten. You know, a lot of the focus falls on the Texas House of Representatives, where you have these warring factions between liberal and conservative Republicans, trying to kind of capture more control of the House of Representatives. But the Senate, you know, shouldn't be forgotten. There's a lot of important races there, and I think people don't necessarily understand why.
Well, that's right, Tony. You know, the primary fight is in the Texas House, where conservatives are trying to capture the chamber. But we also have a fight in the Texas Senate where conservatives are trying to defend the chamber, something that they've captured with the help of taxpayers, the help of activists, and the help of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, but something that they're going to have to fight to keep, and they can always fight to improve.
Yeah, you know, in the most recent legislative session, there were 21 Republican senators. They need 19 votes to bring some bill to the floor by Senate rules. And so you basically had this pretty thin two-vote margin. Now, the concern from conservatives who want to see conservative legislation passed in the next session is that you could lose a Republican senator. One of our rock stars, Connie Burton, a really great conservative senator from Tarrant County, that's the old Wendy Davis seat, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a total razor-thin margin for a Republican. And so, you know, you have a bad cycle. She could lose, and you'd be down to 20 Republican senators. And so then you kind of one or two holdouts suddenly is a problem. And so,
yeah, you'd essentially empower the bad actor. And right now in the Texas Senate, the biggest bad actor is Kel Seliger of Amarillo. He's the most liberal Republican in the Texas Senate as measured by our fiscal responsibility index. And he's a big problem for taxpayers.
Yeah. Now, when you were up in the panhandle going around the state with Texas Scorecard on the Trail, you touched in on this race where he's being challenged from the right by a couple of candidates.
That's right. He's got Victor Leal of Muleshoe, which is an Amarillo suburb. And then down in the south of the district, you know, kind of goes down all the way to Midland. Mike Cannon, a former mayor of Midland, somebody who ran against him 4 years ago and came precipitously close to unseating him, is running again. I think that race is headed to a runoff. I think Victor Leal is going to take votes away from Kel Seliger in Amarillo, and it's going to give Mike Cannon an opening in a runoff to really unseat Kel Seliger. You know, we've had here in Texas politics a trend where every year since 2010, conservatives have defeated the most liberal Republican member of the Texas Senate. This year, that's Kel Seliger, the only Republican who got a C on our fiscal responsibility index, and somebody who taxpayers would very much like to replace in the Texas Senate.
Yeah. Now, moving a little bit to the east, still staying there in the vast openness of north and west Texas, you have Craig Estes, who's being challenged. Similar sort of situation that could play out in the next session if he's able to stick around.
Well, that's right, Tony. Craig Estes being challenged from the right by taxpayer champion Pat Fallon of Denton County, a kind of big central Texas-y district, kind of central Texas, I'd say that. It's kind of Wichita Falls and a little bit south of there.
Central North.
Central North. Yeah. You know, Texas is so big, it's kind of tough to do that. But it's a very interesting race. Craig Estes is somebody who's been a big problem for conservatives who've been trying to repeal the state's in-state tuition law that is a big magnet that drives illegal immigrants to the state, and somebody who's traditionally on the left wing of the Texas Senate, somebody who Democrats have been able to rely on to partner with to block conservative bills. And you replace him with Pat Fallon, somebody who would probably come in and be a top-notch scorer on our index and a big conservative fighter, would be a huge win for taxpayers.
Yeah, so again, you know, if you drop a Republican senator and you have two that can stop any conservative legislation, here's two guys who might be inclined to do so. Now, let's move a little to the east of Dallas, talk about the Bob Hall race. This is a conservative senator being challenged from the left. Tell us about that one.
That's right. Bob Hall's race is kind of probably the biggest primary hold race for conservatives in East Texas. You know, includes a little bit of Dallas County and then cuts east. Bob Hall, a rock-solid member of the Texas legislature, had a perfect score of 100 on our fiscal responsibility index. Also great scores on life as well, being really a grassroots coalition trying to keep him in the Texas Senate, an establishment moderate coalition led by Cindy Burkett, a committee chair of House Speaker Joe Strauss, who's had a primary opponent that almost unseated her last time. Now she's kind of running for her political life the Texas Senate, trying to parlay that. And I think she's going to have a tough row to hoe doing that.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those failing upward kind of deals. She's being challenged by a very tough challenge in her home district. So she actually tries to run up, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you fail, it looks like, okay, well, you just kind of came up short kind of thing. Well, I think it's important we keep an eye on these races. You know, as people look at these, they may lose track of these Senate races, forget how important they are. I think it's something that we'll have to keep an eye on, something we're excited about seeing the results of come Election Day.
That's right, Tony.
Is your congressman doing anything to drain the swamp? Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us more in this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, a budget-busting, bipartisan spending binge passed Congress last week. You know, it'd be nice if those Republicans who campaign as budget hawks at home would actually show up in Washington. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. Taxpayers should be asking every Republican in Texas's congressional delegation what their plan is to shrink the number of federal employees. Don't let them whine about Democrats. The GOP holds the House, Senate, and the White House. They should at least have a plan. President Trump recently released his budget. He wants to reform the federal workforce and bring it into the 21st century. New legislation undoubtedly would shrink the number of federal government employees, and we applaud his policy. We know there will be howls among lobbyists and Republicans in the D.C. suburbs, but taxpayers expect congressmen to fight for reforms, not friendships and inside-the-beltway dollars. Taxpayers want each member of the Texas delegation to claim a big scalp from the bureaucracy. Now look, this should be easy. The Lone Star State is well represented in the congressional leadership, including a great many committee and subcommittee chairmanships. So far, too many have done too little with the power they've been given. Failure by Congress to exercise their Article I constitutional responsibilities to rein in the administrative bureaucracy forfeits the right for members to properly call themselves a conservative Republican. Texas taxpayers want to see the swamp drained. That'll only happen if members of Congress start pulling the plug. Again, it'd be nice to see a plan of action from each member of Texas' congressional delegation in accomplishing that goal. Heck, it'd be nice to see any evidence of action whatsoever. Merely occupying an office in the Capitol complex while doing nothing but uttering rote rhetoric and making empty promises only lets the Democrats advance their destructive agenda. Texans expect and deserve better. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, that's all I've got for you this week. Join us back here next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.